The following program may not be suitable for all ages.
Recorded live from the secret underground lair of Crimson Cowl Comics and Collectibles, this is the Crimson Cowl Comic Club Podcast.
The following issues may contain spoilers. We must descend into the darkness below. There, the dungeon awaits. I'm Anthony.
I'm David.
I'm Kirby.
And I'm Katie.
Welcome to issue number 300 of the Crimson Cowl Comic Club Podcast. Every time we record, we talk about comic books. We have an exciting show for you today to celebrate 300 episodes of this very Comic Club Podcast, with doing a club discussion for a Crimson Cowl Media's very own Tales from the North, The Dungeon. And we just so happened to book one of the creators of this comic book for this very episode, the fellow co-founder of Crimson Cowl Comic Book Club and Crimson Cowl Media and everything above, everything Crimson Cowl related, David Gloyd. Welcome back to this very show.
Thank you. I didn't think that you were ever going to let me back on. It's been a while, but I guess I finally got the security clearance. So
that is right. Yep. Yeah. We trusted you. We figured, you know, we'll put you on a little probation here. You know, we'll see how this goes and go forward.
I had to buy my way in.
Oh, yep. For those checking out the audio feed, you guys subscribe to us over on YouTube to see what he was referring to there. That is a nice little exclusive. So what we're going to do, we're going to do a club discussion for that comic and kind of do it spoiler free, because we would like people to check that out and place orders through David and get your hands on this printed comic book. Then we'll jump into the weekly reviews. That's where we go back and forth and we talk about those books that we've been reading. They could be new, they could be old, but we're going to talk about them there. And then in a very special news segment, we're going to do a kind of a show and tell preview of Madison Mighty Con, the next comic book convention that myself and David will be attending under Crimson Cowl Media in partnership with Cartoonist by Night and everything that follows. So we're going to do a special show and tell and kind of show off what we're going to be doing and selling over at that show. So that is going to be the lineup for this episode. So let's jump right into it with the club discussion. Okay, to kick off the club discussion, we're going to do Tales from the North, The Dungeon. Part of the Tales from the North anthology series, Tales from the North, The Dungeon is the first printed comic from Crimson Cowl Media. Believing there is a small window to reap the benefits of a prophecy, Roald, is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Roald, accompanied by a knight and his companion, leads his group of misfits and thieves through the dungeon of the Witch King. But is the Witch King truly dead, or has his reign of terror just begun? This comic is done by David Gloyd and David Gloyd II. So here we go. I will actually kind of kick it off to David Gloyd, the co-creator of this comic. Before we dive into our reactions, I mean, we're probably not going to ask you specifically your thoughts on the story, you know, like your reactions to it, but for anybody who is tuning in for issue number 300 or needs a refresher course, if you kind of want to give us kind of a quick pitch on how this came to be in this comic that we're about to talk about, feel free to jump into that.
I'll just say, when I read it, I found it very predictable. I mean, I knew what was going to happen every page. So,
yeah, man. As the writer, that might be a problem. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, this started with a webcomic through CrimsonCowl.com. There's several chapters for Tales from the North, as well as a holiday special. And feel free to jump off from there to kind of talk about why this book exists.
Well, I mean, we had been putting out some shorter stories in the Tales from the North anthology. There's minor connective tissue throughout. I mean, you come across a couple of the characters more than once, but there's nothing in there really where you read one, you have to read another with the exception of there is one that we put in two parts just because we wanted to get something new put on there. So we put it as part one and part two, although it was never intended to be two parts. But aside from that, everything on there is, I mean, you can read it in any order. You don't have to read them all, but why wouldn't you? I mean, they're free on the website. Yeah, we were talking about the next one that we wanted to put out and decided that at the time we had a con coming up. Yeah, I was talking about which kind of prints and art and whatever I wanted to do, and talking to David about if he wanted to do any of that stuff as well. And then he finally went, well, why don't we just do the next Tales from the North as a printed comic? It was interesting because Tales from the North is his creation. He had these ideas. He was doing he was DMing some role-playing games. And initially Tales from the North was meant to be based on that world that he does those games in, and some of the characters. The first one that we released was actually taken directly from one of his campaigns. And the rest of them aren't, but they still exist in that world that could or could not be like a real place in a real time. Yeah, we kind of rushed because we had a bit of a time crunch to get it done. So I wrote the script for it, which in itself was kind of interesting because this is his world, and sometimes I would, you know. I was sharing it with him as I went, and he was like, "Oh, you can't do that," you know, at times. And I'd go back and I'd make changes. So there was, we were in constant communication on everything. And, I was really getting out there, and I had an assortment of different types of they weren't all just human characters. And he's like, "Yeah, I don't really do like elves and dwarves and stuff like that in my world, although sometimes you do see some stuff. There's one, there's some goblins and a goblin character that pops up in a few stories. So I mean, there is some of that to it, but I had to change the characters, and all it was a matter of letting him draw them however he wanted to draw them, and I just took away any references to them being, a dwarf or an elf or anything, and he just made them all humans across the board, aside from, some of the bad guys, the kind of undead characters and stuff like that. Our cast of characters, our protagonists, I guess. I won't really call them good guys because they're not really good guys. Yeah, they're all human characters.
Misfits and thieves.
Yes, that's exactly what they are. It's just a group of misfits and thieves that, get together. The inspiration for the story goes back to role-playing games like D&D and stuff like that. A very common type of campaign is the dungeon crawl. And I kind of went, well, what if we kind of took that idea of doing a dungeon crawl, but like tried to figure out like how to do it in a story that was, could be fun and everything, and short without just them going through all these long cavernous dungeon things and whatever. So kind of came up with the story with that in mind. David doesn't like to really compare it to role-playing games, and he wants to like de-emphasize that it's based on that, to not give the, I don't know, wrong impression. I don't know exactly what that wrong impression would be, but it still makes me think of that, but then I was never big into those games myself.
Oh, good. Well, that was perfect because I was going to ask you to kind of do a little synopsis there as far as kind of leading into our discussion reaction. And you did a good job with that because, the story kind of revolves around the dungeon crawl. So what we'll do, because we do, encourage people to reach out to David and buy their own physical copy of this book and check out the free web comics. So we'll kind of talk about some, reactions to it. Let's kick it off to Kirby first here, if you want to dive into, if you want to crawl into the dungeon first, if you will, lead us into your reactions.
It was interesting. I'm not big on the medieval stuff, but I enjoyed reading this. I would like to see it colorized, but I like kind of how it had that black, white, and blood feel to it because it's basically a black and white imagery, but you do have the red tints on it for any of the blood splatter or anything blood related throughout the book. So it could actually fit in that category with those things. And you mentioned no dwarf-like character. I thought this character here was a dwarf character because when he's standing by, even when the guy's holding him, he's way shorter than him. So I just assumed that that's, I was trying to pinpoint each character like a barbarian, an archer, a dwarf. And that's kind of what I looked at the table of characters. I kind of felt like that. And that's, I just automatically assumed that for him. So.
And you know what? I mean, that could be open to a little bit of interpretation there, I guess. The funny thing is that that character initially was intended to be a dwarf, and then David, made him human, but he's kind of kept that stature. There's a few of the characters here where they're human, but their size and everything somewhat fits with how I had them initially before we turned them all into humans.
Yeah, so it's like when I look at the table, I pretty much look at it as a couple thieves, an archer, a dwarf, a barbarian, it's like a wizard. It's like it's a good group of characters. It just has that variety feel of all the different styles. So, but yeah, I definitely got the Dungeons and Dragons role playing feel to it with the storyline, a little Witcher hints in here and stuff, but. Yeah, I'd like to know more about this witch character that we read about, and I didn't know we were reviewing this till a half hour before the show, so I had to quickly read it so I didn't get to go back and look through all the mini stories and that too beforehand. So I just got this taste before the show, but yeah, definitely need to go check out those stories, find out more about these characters, and see what's up with them all. But definitely interesting.
Yeah,
Hey,
I.
David, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I was wondering, could you like walk me through a little bit the publishing process? Because I'm really interested in that and for mine and, some other projects.
Right. So basically, I mean, we just self-published it. We do it under the Crimson Cull Media, banner. But essentially, I mean, it's just the same as self-publishing. We're just using that name. And basically all we did is there's printers. In fact, if you look at Anthony there, he's got we've got an ad in the comic. And that's who actually we went through. I did look at a few different places as far as the printing. I heard some positive reviews. Part of those came from Anthony, who passed them on through other people that he knows that have used them and were happy with their work. Price for printing was pretty comparable to other places. I did find one that would have been a little bit less, but I didn't really have anything to back up quality and whatever. And we did something you should never do. I strongly advise against this, is because we had such a time crunch, we took our chances on doing this without
Proof.
getting a proof, yes.
Ooh.
We did not get a physical proof. Again, I do not recommend doing that because if there's any errors in it whatsoever, I mean you're stuck with it. But we just didn't have enough time by our deadline to get the proof back, look it over, order them, and still get it. In fact, I think we if I remember correctly, the con was, I don't remember if that was a Saturday or Sunday. We got them back Thursday, I think it was. So
Oh, wow.
we got them back just a couple of days before the con that we wanted to put these out in. But I mean that was pretty much it. It was checking with who we wanted to do the printing, seeing what their format specifications were so that we could have our files in the right size and everything else. And every printer is going to be a little bit different. So it's a good idea to either have where you can make adjustments easily at the end of having it all together, or knowing who you're going to go with before you actually have them in at that point, so that you don't have to reformat things afterwards. And that's kind of what we did, is we kind of decided who we were going to go with, got an idea of how much it was going to cost going through them, and put everything in those formats right away. Pardon me. And then then it was just a matter of placing the order and waiting for them to show up. But again, the other step
That's
would have
really
been
simple.
getting the proof. I think they're pretty good with the turnaround time on a proof. But yeah, I mean, you definitely want to get that proof in hand, look things over,
Agreed.
make sure that there's no errors. One concern for me is always, I also do the editing, but I wrote it and I edited it, so it's like, am I going to catch my own errors?
Oh, for sure.
And sometimes I've done that before. For example, there's a certain business brochures I printed up, and I found a problem with it after having them printed. So,
Always works that way.
and that was something in getting those done. It didn't pay to get proofs ahead of time. It's just that looking at it digitally on my computer, I didn't catch everything. You get it in print, and it's different. Another problem is, you don't know until you've had it printed what it's going to look like color wise and everything else.
Oh, okay.
So, you're choosing your colors and everything else for this, and you got to realize that once you send it off to the printer and it's printed, it might look slightly different than you expected it to. And I will say that happened with this, but we were actually happy with it. And the one thing is, where we do have blood, because the only color we used in here was red, it did end up being darker than we initially intended, but it actually fit the tone
Yeah,
better than what
that'd
we had.
work.
It popped a little bit more, in the original art. We had that red, it really popped, out of like eyes and limbs and stuff like that.
Literally
But
pop.
the darkened version really fit the tone. It's this kind of darker tone to it. And some of it's, it still is there. You can still see that red, and it still pops when you have a black and white. It's just a little bit more subdued than it was. There are a couple other things where they printed a little off. But again, it ended up working. So every error that there was with printing ended up being a kind of a blessing, really. However, there was a good chance that that it wasn't going to be a blessing. So again, get the proof, look it over, because then you can go back and, if we decided that, oh, we didn't like that darker, more subdued red, we wanted it the way that we wanted it. And then we could have made some adjustments to the color, sent it back, then it would have been probably a lot closer to what we had originally intended.
Okay, very cool. That's a really interesting process. Thank you. And yeah,
Thanks.
I agree. It always comes down to catching errors, and yeah, I swear they don't appear until after they've been printed, but I feel you on that for sure.
Yeah, I guess the other part of the publishing process is, of course, the marketing and afterwards. That, because of my lack of time, busy schedule, and everything, I haven't been able to do as much as I wanted. I do have a couple issues with our website, so it's not set where you can. And one of these days, I need to just sit down and concentrate on getting that fixed so that people can order it directly off the site rather than contacting me and working it out. Sure, that works, but it'll be a lot more convenient for the general public, at least, to be able to just go to the website, order it, and we ship it off, and it's done. It's good.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and going back to like just like the technical layouts of the issue. Like there's no balloons that are covered within the binding. Like everything is scaled. So like without having a proof like that, very easy if you have, even though you have some art panels that bleed to the staple, but purposely, for a purpose of showing the extra, background, but there's no like word balloons or important dialogue or anything like that that gets lost within the staple. So that's a
Yeah, like so here's an example. This is, pretty much full page, minus the panel at the top there. But it's all the way over to the edge, so of course that's going to go off. But the rest of them, we followed their criteria for bleeds and everything else, and turned out great.
Yeah, and it's decent page quality stock and cover stock, and it's like I buy a new book from Marvel and half the pages are stuck together down the seam and it's like glue and stuff on it, and I gotta like tear it at it to finish reading the word balloon and stuff, and this has nice gaps in between and you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, we could have paid more and got a heavier duty cover or something like that. I think this is fine. The
No,
pages,
I think once you go beyond this is when you get that weird feel when you're opening the stuff, and this
yeah,
has
they,
that perfect flow to it. It
yeah,
doesn't stiffen up or nothing.
it's not floppy, but it's not overly stiff. It's still a floppy.
Yeah. And
I'm really happy with the way that that all turned out. And I will add in, of course, there's a price, and as far as comic books go, it's an expensive comic, and I've brought this up when we talked about it prior to, releasing it and everything. But if you're printing a small run of comics, it's going to cost more. And so there's a reason that it's that expensive.
I don't call it an expensive comic. I call it an independent comic. Because you're equal with every independent distributor out there that's selling at a show. They're all selling their comics for 10, 15, 20 bucks a piece because they're low print runs. So.
Right. And I guess my opinion on the whole thing comes from my years of being in a comic book store and owning my own comic book store. And that was always a common thing. As people would come in and they would complain about the $4 price tag on a comic or whatever, or why is this one more and whatever. So I like to tell people, there's a reason why it's more. But we did try to make it, worth the extra money, and we throw in some extras. So when you buy it, we give you a one of a kind custom 4x6 card with some original art on it. Not necessarily our fanciest work, but it's something that's, we just do it. And we've got a variety of them. There's some that I've done completely the art. There's a few that David's done completely the art on them. There's some that we worked together. I penciled it, he inked, or whatever it was. So, and a lot of them were characters from Tales from the North, whether they were in this book or in something else. And every once in a while, we throw in something a little extra, I know we had one that was thrown in there that was like Ash from the Evil Dead movies and stuff like that. So we'll throw something a little extra in there. Something a little extra for your money. And
Right.
we're happy to autograph them for those who want them, or if you want a virgin book, then we don't desecrate it.
Cool. And yeah, and kind of talking about the price point and independent comics. Like I remember at one of the Mighty Con shows, I was the I openly, bought somebody's comic, didn't know much about it, and I think it was around that $10 price, and then they were. You could just see how excited they were, and that was the first time they've set up a table. That's the first time they sold a copy of their comic, and it was to a stranger. And like, you just, when you see that kind of reaction too from a creator, you can just see how much heart was put into something when they react to, someone showing the slightest of interest, And yeah, so that plays a part into the price as well, I think, is investing into the creator's hard work and future endeavors to keep creating. One thing I wanted to point out, kind of talking about my reactions, is that I really loved when the gang got together and started to do that dungeon crawl. And the panel that I wanted to show off, it's probably my favorite panel in the issue, outside of from some of the gory action stuff. Like, some of that stuff is very well done, but I just love the lineup here of just the winding staircase going down, and then the silhouette, and with a little spider hanging in the corner. Like, just the whole design of that page there, I think, is very well done. And half of that panel, half of that page is blacked out, but it's done so well that, with the being the I can't think of the art term I'm thinking of, but the contrast of having, the characters on one side and then the darkness of what they're going into on the other side. But yeah, I've read this 3 times now, and that panel still strikes me, and I just love how that looks. So that's one thing I wanted to mention. And going into that scene leading into the dungeon, and they're coming up against, some skeleton corpse, and you're just kind of, this is the moment when the action really kicks in. There's story build up, they have their mission, you gotta introduce yourself to these characters, and you just kind of, see that ragtag group of misfits and thieves, as we mentioned. But once you get into that dungeon moment, there's no time wasted when the rest of the issue is just kind of very accelerated and very high octane, and there's a lot of, yeah, as I'm flipping through, things that I don't want to show off, kind of use as a, advertising point to pick up this book. But yeah, I just love that transition from going into the unknown and then everything just kind of hitting the fan, if you will. So.
Yeah, of course. I was concerned about pacing, because you write it until you've got it all there and done and whatever, and you read through it. It's difficult to know, how your pacing was, and if, by that time you've read the story, because you wrote it, you edited it, you did all these changes to it, and you've read it so many times that when you're actually reading through it again, it's hard to know if you're reading it in the same way that somebody who's picking it up for the first time is reading it, and does the pacing work. And I think we kind of really didn't waste too much time getting to some action. We had to like build it up and give you the story and what is their purpose and why are they together and who are they. So we had to put all that in there. But once you get going into the action, they didn't really get a chance to catch their breath very much. And as you're reading it, it's kind of the same thing. There's not too many points where you're just slowing down, taking a breath, and then going into something. It's kind of like bang, bang, bang. It's one thing after another.
Yeah, I think it had a pretty good talking about pacing. There's a lot of characters introduced around that, that opening scene, as we open up on a little bar, a little inn, God's Hammer. I'll show that with it being the first panel there. But yeah, like meeting the characters, there's a lot of characters at play, so I think it's just kind of a lot of good dialogue back and forth of just kind of getting an idea of of who these people are, getting their intentions and their attitude. Attitude, I think, is a good thing too, where I think that really reads out each character reacts, and then once they're all just ready for a mission, you just, yeah, I think it did a good job of setting that up, so.
That location that you just mentioned is actually a good example of something that shows up in another story. So it actually was in our first one that was released. We used the same location. So similar thing in that other story, it kind of starts out in that same place with people meeting at at this location at a tavern, and figuring out, hey, this is going on. Let's go do this. So we did that same thing. We used the same place in this, just to show that this is the same world. It's different people, but again, same thing. There's also a couple names that come up, in that location that are from that same story that the location is in. The characters are in there. You don't really need to know who they are, but if you've read it, you get it.
All right, one editorial note that I have. Is the F word used back in medieval times? It's the first time I think I really heard a mention.
So It's funny because David actually had an idea for a story, and we haven't done it, and I don't know if we will or not. But there's a story that he has that's set in modern times with a couple of archaeologists who find something from, this north location, right? And they find a number of weapons and stuff like that, and they're having trouble placing, like, hey, this is from this century. Oh, but this is from this. Why are they together? And it just doesn't make sense. And they're trying to figure out who these people are or what it's from, because something shouldn't have existed at the same time, or was it really old but it's dated around the same time. And so he did have an idea to do a story kind of like that. It would just be a very short thing, and kind of just poking fun at how not everything might be historically accurate, but then again, we at no point say this is our realm, this is
There's
Earth,
no
this era,
date or
or whatever.
timeline or
Based on true events.
Yeah. Based on, roughly.
then since David's the writer of this book, I'm really looking forward to ne the next Crimson Cull get together where we do karaoke. So a little singing part in there with the character.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had one character who was a bard, so we had to have him sing something. Not that it really has a good rhythm to it or whatever, but
But they call it out. It's turned into a joke when someone in the next panel just like, it doesn't even rhyme.
yeah, exactly. But he's up there on the table, and he's
Gotta get David drunk and get him singing.
You got some suds and spirits in you. That's gonna happen.
There too, there was some discussion between David and I about what instrument the character should be playing, because, well, what would have
You
been
gotta
appropriate
always say that
at the
little
time?
ukulele or whatever.
So
Cool. Any other thoughts and reactions in Kirby that he needed to add at all?
I'm interested. I'm looking forward to where it goes. So.
Cool. Katie, did you have any other questions you can think of before we move on?
Not right now. I'm just, really happy for you and very, very proud of you. And I can't wait to see more from this universe. This is awesome. Great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, most welcome.
And I will say, I'm not going to give away the ending or anything, but it does open it up to something. If we wanted to have a sequel story to this one rather than an unrelated thing, so there's an opportunity to do that. However, if that ever happens, we probably will write it in a way where you don't necessarily have to read this to get it.
Yeah, it serves as a good one shot while leaving open possibilities. So if people would like to get a hold of their very own copy of Tales from the North, The Dungeon, how would they go about doing that, David?
I can be contacted again at some point. You should be able to just go to the website. You still can go to the website because you can contact us through the website. You just can't write
CrimsonCowl.com.
directly. Crimsoncull.com. You can also go to our Facebook page. You can message us on there, and then we'll figure out how you would like to have it shipped if you want it. People who are local, I mean, we've had people pick it up from us. We've had where I've hand delivered it to some people. So locally we can make arrangements. If it's something that we got to ship out, we'll just figure out, what's the best way, what's it going to cost for the shipping for you, and throw that in. And again, always
David.
trying to make it a good process that's takes care of you. And some people might have preferences on how they ship it, because we don't want to send anything out and it's you're reading it accordion style.
And David, I think you might be up for it to buy a plane ticket and hand deliver it that way by just flying to you and hand deliver it. So you just gotta find out.
It's all dependent on how much you're willing to pay for shipping.
So yeah, and I've said it in the past too, but if you are watching us on YouTube, Crimson Cowl Comic Club on YouTube, and see any of our posts through Facebook and anything, all you have to do is send over a comment, and I can always relay that information as well for some of the online social media through Instagram and things like that that I run that portion. Anytime I get anything like that, I can forward that information over to David. So, highly suggest people check that out if you want to get a little teaser on what you would dive into with this printed all new original story that is printed. You can check out some of the free chapters that are available on crimsoncowl.com. There are several chapters up there, including a holiday winter special as well, and that'll give you a kind of a little free taste on what this world is like. And just remind yourself that what's in the printed comic is not on the website. So that's a nice little tease to see what you can get more from Tales from the North, The Dungeon. Cool. So that will do it for our club discussion, but we have a couple more segments. So let's jump to it with the weekly reviews. First up for the weekly reviews, Ghostbusters Back in Town, issue number one. A year and a half after the events of Ghostbusters Afterlife, the movie, the Ghostbusters are officially back in business and headed to where it all began, New York City. I don't know if they intended it that way, but that's the way I'm delivering it. Callie, Gary, Trevor, and Phoebe are moving into the firehouse and ready to take on the Spengler family business. Or are they? Ghostbusting on top of changing family dynamics has a way of going awry, and that's exactly what one paranormal force is counting on. See what the Big Apple has in store for the latest generation of Ghostbusters with the first installment of an all-new series that bridges the gap between Ghostbusters Afterlife and the upcoming sequel, which at this point is out. This comic is done by David M. Buer. I don't know, it's not a meant to be a pun, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but half of his last name is Boo, so it's fitting for a Ghostbusters comic. All right, and then there's another autocorrect, talking about needing, oh no, it is right. Blue Delinquent. There we go. Mildred Lewis and lettering by Comic Craft's Jimmy Betancourt. Betancourt. So this is the prequel to the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, a movie that is probably still available out in the select theaters. This comic came out after the fact. I think it was meant to come out a little early, but it was I think it was met with a little delay. But I think it still reads good. After seeing the brand new movie, there was no way the 4-issue series was coming out. I think it's 4 issues before the movie, so it wasn't intended to have the whole story out there anyways. If you had just seen Ghostbusters Afterlife, which I think is a good first movie in the Ghostbusters franchise, even if you haven't seen the ones from the 80s, I think it does a good job of introducing this concept to a new generation. If you've only seen that one and you dive into this comic, this is a great sequel to that Afterlife movie. When you jump into the movie, you are jumped. Literally thrown right into the action with them in New York, of taking over the firehouse. They're in Ghostbusters uniforms and they have everything all set. They're cruising around, they got their gadgets, they're already living in this space. And so when you watch the movie, you know that time has passed since the last one. And now you are just getting that moving in experience with this first issue. So the issue itself is a little tame as far as, you're just getting the family dynamics thrown into the firehouse and seeing them set up their space and kind of figuring out what this adjustment from moving from Oklahoma, saving the world in Oklahoma, and jumping into what some will say the greatest city in the world. And jumping into New York City and adjusting to this new lifestyle as Ghostbusters. The sequel movie definitely deals with, how the city reacts to that and having this presence. They've gone a couple decades without, the world experiencing these ghosts, that we've seen in the late 80s and in the original movies. And timeline wise, they still, even though we didn't have a third Ghostbusters movie in this with this cast for quite some time, and during that time we had found out that there really wasn't a lot of paranormal activity that had been going on, and the movies and have further explained that the world has kind of been without the Ghostbusters for some time. So there are people within this comic that react just being like, is this for real? And like, who are the Ghostbusters? So there are people that don't even know who they are, but the ones that had lived through it and heard the tales and everything, including Gary, played by Paul Rudd in the movie, just being like, he's like, oh yeah, he's like, I remember seeing it on TV and everything, and you know, all the stuff, Statue of Liberty walking and things like that. So it's cool to see more of the reaction of that. But this is dealing with them settling into school. You see how the local, you know, New York City students are dealing with seeing these, you know, Phoebe, who is the granddaughter of Egon Spengler, and you know, she's still wearing her overalls and she has her appearance that she, you know, from her normal Oklahoma, you know, lifestyle and appearance and stuff like that. And everybody in New York City is all like, oh, look at this weirdo, you know. So you see a lot of them adjusting and the world around them adjusting to them. Like I said, it's a little tame as far as like action, but I think towards the end you do have a moment then where you kind of you know where you're going, you know, you set up your initial threat for what this mini series is going to touch upon. I'm pretty sure it's 4 issues. Once again, I think it did a good job. Gave me some little extra, you know, quote unquote deleted scenes that happened before the actual movie, because you're just thrust into like, all right, it's 2 or 3 years later and whatever it is, and now we're in the action. This kind of slows it down a little bit to kind of catch us up to eventually where Frozen Empire the movie takes us. So yeah, I think that's all I'm going to say there for Ghostbusters. Back in Town, issue number one from Dark Horse Comics. Kirby?
Awesome book. We got Nacelleverse number zero. This was done very well. It's giving an introduction into Roboforce, biker mice from Mars, Sectars, Power Lords, and the Great Garlu, which is things from the 80s animation time, basically right around Transformers and all that stuff when everything came out. That everybody loves nowadays. That's all come making big comebacks. And the way they did this, I mean, you get a nice little timeline of explaining each of the groups of characters, what they were about back in the day and stuff, and basically a little history of them so you know where they're coming from. But the way they did this was we get the Great Garlu character, a little green dude, just going through. He's traveling through space and he's basically wanting to go back to his planet. He's all set to go back to Larlon. And while he's waiting to hop on a ship and go back to Larlon, he finds out that Larlon's no more. It basically his planet got blown up. So he's got no home anymore. All his friends, family, everybody's gone as far as he knows. He wants to make a trip back and see if he can at least see what's up with the destruction, try and find out about that, but he's having problems getting there. The dispatcher's like, well, you got no place to go, you're gonna have to pick a different destination. And Garlu gets a little ticked off about it all, and when Garlu gets mad, he can increase in size, so all of a sudden he just starts to grow, and he gets throughout the book, he gets as far as kaiju size in one of the storylines. But while he's doing that, we get this character that's like sees him and in jail because he got mad and caused a bunch of problems. So he gets tossed in a cell, and he's got this other character next to him in a cell. And this character's like, well, you can come with me. I got to make some drop-offs and stuff. And we'll find a new home for you. And they go off traveling and stuff. And the way they pull this out is the while they travel, they go to these different spots, and each spot's is a different one of these worlds. And they start out with the Power Lords section, and basically they're dealing with a bunch of home wars that are going on, basically civil wars on their own planet, and it's like it's not safe for you to really be here. So he goes through something. I don't want to give away each one of them, but it's fun seeing how you go on into Sektar's world, so he gets the insect version of it. You get the biker mice from Mars. You get to see what those characters are up to today and who they're chasing down. And it just sets you in the timeline with all the different characters. And of course, biker mice from Mars is one of my favorites, and I loved it as a child. I'm really happy that it's come making a big comeback right now. But after reading this, now I'm stuck with all five of these damn things again. It's like, it's just like the world of Geiger. Now I'm sucked into this world. I wasn't a big fan of Sektars and stuff back in the day. I wasn't not really into RoboForce, the robots and stuff like that, but I've been getting more and more into them lately. The stories have been really fun, and these are the same way. There's pretty much all the worlds that he goes to. Everybody's got some type of feud going on with someone else, and they're dealing with some type of issue, and he doesn't want to get caught up into it. But then there's some twists and turns with his little riding buddy that picked him up and took him, and he finds out that there's some various little things that he had planned for Garlo, and so that's why he took him as a companion and brought him with him, and you get to find out all about that. But if you've liked any of these character worlds back in the 80s or 90s and early 90s, whenever they came out, I think you'd get into all of them. They all pretty much link together nicely. They have their own little character crossovers and twists that kind of work out nicely with it. The artwork styles for all five of them are similar, so it flows really well and just kind of puts you in the same world, even though you are jumping from planet to planet and stuff like that. You just feel like you're all in that same environment. So, but yeah, I was really happy with this. And as far as I know, the only thing I've seen was that I mentioned it on the last previews issue was that little teaser for Biker Mice from Mars number one, but it's not in the catalog yet. So I'm guessing next month we'll probably see something that'll start launching these off on there. So, but yeah, check that out. That's all part of the Nacelleverse. Melissa Flores, Ramat Handako, Roald Marcellius, Diogenes Neves, and Francis Portella. Nobody I know, but I like everything they did in this book.
Cool.
And somebody other than my character whose names were Rolled.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna learn some more kaiju because Katie has another volume of kaiju. What you got?
That's right. This week I have Kaiju number 8, volume 9 by Naoya Matsumoto. This is the most recent volume of Kaiju number 8. 10 is coming out in a few months. We were talking a little bit in the interludes between sections that the whole series is called Kaiju number 8, and this is volume 9, which we were like, wait, was that 8? 9? Is that two things? Nope, it's just one. Kaiju number 8, volume 8 is really confusing because you look at it and you go, aren't they all number 8? Anyway, this is a really big issue. If you are reading the series, there are going to be some major spoilers for characters here, so listen at your own risk. But in our previous issue, so Kaiju were attacking the Japan Defense Force base, and it was looking like they were going to win, and everyone was going to be killed. And Kafka Hibino, our main character, revealed his secret identity as Kaiju number 8 to save all of his friends and his teammates and protect the base, and use his Kaiju superpowers to fight off the other monsters. But in doing this, he knew that he was really betraying their trust. He was going to get arrested and possibly even, put in prison by the Defense Force because their job's to fight Kaiju, not come Kaiju. And there's even darker rumors swirling that the Defense Force has scientists that study certain kaiju and do gross experiments on them to create weapons. So Kafka Hibino's in prison. He feels like crap because he's like, man, all my teammates are mad at me. They're never going to want to talk to me again. Like, how would I ever even explain myself to them? And he's got nothing really to do but work out and kind of, sit and think about things. But one of the captains of the team brings in his phone. He's like, hey, like I pulled a couple strings and you can have your phone back, right? So He, as you do, turns his phone back on and has like 500 some messages, and they're all from his friends and teammates. And he's like, oh man, they're gonna say like, you're a liar, stay away from me, you're the worst, what a freak. And all the messages are like sympathy and concern, and they're like, you know, I'm really worried about you. I hope you're okay. Thank you so much for saving us. Get well soon. So very touching, you know. I pray that you're safe and sound, come back alive. You had you had me that one's cut off, but anyway. And then he's like, oh man, and he gets all emotional. He's like, oh, this, you know, you ever have it where like you lose your cool in front of your friends, and then you're like, oh my God, I'm the biggest idiot ever, like they're gonna hate me. And then they're like, no, it was like we were just concerned about you. So I think that's definitely a really relatable moment, because you always feel like you have real egg on your face, and then everyone's like, no, it wasn't that big of a deal, but are you okay? So I felt like that was super relatable. And so things are a little quiet on the kaiju front for a while. There were a few isolated outbreaks, but they were contained. And everyone's kind of feeling like this is the calm before the storm that gets mentioned several times throughout this book, that we know the kaiju aren't gone. Kaiju number nine, the main bad guy of the series, has yet to make their big move. And we have a couple funny incursions, like the kaiju that was just a very hungry boy and was eating all the fish from the ocean, and the kaiju that mysteriously appeared in Shinjuku and Shibu. Yep, I'm gonna screw this up. Sorry to anyone Japanese listening. Shibuya Ward, Tokyo, which is like a really busy like intersection in a shopping district. You know, she just kind of showed up there and was hovering in the air, you know, just looking weird, but minding her own business. And you know, those are all neutralized relatively easily. But as we are waiting for the next big thing, it turns out those rumors about the Defense Force reverse engineering kaiju to make weapons is true. They're making something called numbers weapons, which only like the most powerful Defense Force members are able to use. So we see Shinomiya practicing, and numbers weapons 4 and 10 are being tested for deployment, which is going to come up later in the book, because the kaiju do, of course, attack. Kaiju number nine ends up making their big move. So all of these kind of, I guess, kaiju plants that were neutralized a little too easily end up activating. There's a really chilling moment where in Shinjuku Ward, so I mixed up the two. We have Shibuya and Shinjuku, but in Shinjuku, the one kind of hovering demon kaiju, you know, she just looks like a Harajuku girl, you know, very stylized teenager type stuff. And they're all like, oh, what are you doing? She's like, oh, you know, I'm just waiting for my friends. And then she goes super demon, and her like eyes glow, and like her skin like turns black and stuff. And she's like, oh, I'm just gonna call my friends. And all her friends are kaiju. And now the kaiju apocalypse has come. So we see them attacking all over Japan. There's a really pretty crazy one of like somebody's having a wedding, and in these big giant picture windows, all of a sudden this kaiju just like comes forward, and like you see their face like framed in this window behind like the altar and the cross and stuff. Wild, super visual. That one kaiju who was just eating all the fish turned into a giant koi and is now attacking the town. Lots and lots of fights, and there's incursions everywhere. So people are freaking out, and they're like, how are we going to stop this? What are we going to do? Well, the Defense Force is mobilized, and we get, gosh, like 30 pages of kaiju butt kicking action. So cool seeing all the different costumes and body armor. Those numbers weapons I mentioned get put to the test, and they're pushed to their absolute limit, which is super cool. Just a bunch of kaiju crashing into buildings, big guns, giant airplanes, helicopters, the Defense Force looking totally badass. So much fun. I really enjoyed it a lot. And then the final kind of chapter in this book, we have Hoshina, who has been helping train Kafka while he's been in prison. Hoshina's using a new numbers weapon, number 10, and it's the first sentient weapon. So it's still has like the kaiju brain and Hoshina, and they end up having to form an uneasy alliance to put their skills to the absolute test and max out against fighting all of these kaiju. And that's pretty awesome and really exciting. Just if you like fighting big giant monsters, if you like, the Godzilla movies or Pacific Rim, you're going to really enjoy this a lot. And that book ends with, "Now that's more like it. We tackle them head on. Follow me, even if it kills you." And that's the end of volume 9. A lot happened in this book. I liked it a lot. Evidently has been praising it. I would say if you were just picking this up, it probably be a little bit hard to follow. So you would maybe at least want to read a few other issues within the series. And I really recommend this a lot. I have issue 10 pre-ordered. I thought it was a great mix of action, of emotion, of character development, and definitely satisfies everything I want from a kaiju story. I loved it. I really recommend it. That's Kaiju number 8, volume 9, Story and Art by Naoya Matsumoto. Check it out.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's big into kaiju and manga and everything. I'm gonna have to see if he knows about this. So.
Yeah, awesome.
Cool. All right. The next one I'm talking about, something that's been on my stack for a while, from Keen Spot Entertainment, Toy issue number one. Toy is a wacky new all-ages series. Follow the adventures of Rock Ledge's greatest inventor, Toy, as he and his pals deal with the evil Lily Buttercup and her gang of goons. In this action-packed first issue, Lily Buttercup terrorizes the town with her new ginormous mech suit. Will Toy be able to stop the evil kitty before she destroys his beloved town? Or will this kitty have executed the perfect plan? This comic's done by Brett Murphy and Wilson Gandolfo. All right, I had picked this up. Had a couple issues sitting on my stack. Finally, like, hey, I should read this now. This is super fun. This sets up a really fun world. It's talking about opening up on the on this metropolis type of city, home to the Buttercup Corporation. This Buttercup Corporation is run by the Lily Buttercup, who is this little kitty who is kind of brought in and teased in, like it's like some going to be some big menacing threat, as you see here with the shadow entering on this table, and then it just ends up being a cute little kitty. But the cute little kitty definitely packs a powerful presence when it comes to running this corporation. This team is kind of built up of all these inventors, essentially. You've got Sly, who is a master inventor, and Lily Buttercup's right-hand snake. So Sly is the snake that is the inventor that's part of this team. You have Arthur the Bruiser Bailey, who is the head of Buttercup's security and former wrestling champ. So we cut back to this character's former wrestling days, but now you see him as basically an elderly man who is basically always asleep. And there's some moments throughout this issue of kind of being woken up by his own farting. So there's a lot of interesting stuff that's happening with this character. And then you have Brutus, who is a genius when it comes to numbers. I was gonna say numbness. numbers. But he's got this giant gorilla in a suit there who's just number crunching. So you kind of set up this what you're kind of believing is this evil organization. You also have Phil Phillips, who is the most handsome accountant in Megatropolis, and you see this this guy here, Phil Phillips, who's I don't know the age of this character, but this character has a lot of there's a lot of characters that are attracted to this character. So there's some women who are saying, "Please do my taxes, Phil. I love you." "No, mine, Phil. I'm filing single." So like, you just set up these wacky characters within one or two pages, and you really get the life of what's happening at this corporation. But then the other side of the story is dealing with Rock Ledge. Rock Ledge is this kind of a little community here. It's basically the exact opposite of what we saw with this big booming metropolis. And we follow characters who are like almost the exact opposite of what we just dealt with. Our lead character, Toy, it took me a while to figure this out, but what I got from some context clues and eventual reading some other issues, Toy is a literal toy. It looks like it's like a like a bank, like a toy, like it's like a rabbit bank. I'm trying to see if I have some other images, but Toy is the name of this rabbit bank because there's like a coin slot on the back, as we see in later pictures. But we also just have this crocodile who is always kind of daydreaming, taking naps, dreaming about food, and you just have this wacky group of characters that are also inventors, and you see that these inventors are basically competing with each other. So when Lily Buttercup and their team realizes that these people from Rock Ledge are possibly going to steal their customers, and they're just kind of creating these random inventions and things, so it's not one particular type of item. But yeah, it that's when the characters are going to collide in the story. So everything I just said there was literally just the first half setup of this book. There's a lot of cartoon craziness that happens throughout this. I have three issues in my possession. I think there might be four or five of them out there at the moment. But yeah, this was super fun. A lot of just wacky characters that are introduced in like all these different pages. I want to introduce this a snail man, if you will, a snail person, a person that is working for a mail carrier, Shelly the snail. Who is there's a great panel gag here that I'll basically read this here, where they're like, "Good morning, Shelly," and as they have already driven past, you have a different beat for each panel, and the snail is like, "Slow down, you maniac." And that's what the whole like presentation of that panel breakdown is the as they've already driven past the snail there. But they're just a lot of fun here. I absolutely love this. I can't wait to dive into more of this. And I don't remember if it was just with a keen spot loyalty, if something was tipped off. I'm not familiar with these specific creators. I don't think there were any variant covers of people that I was familiar with within the keen spot, powerhouse of creators and people that they work with, but somehow this got on my radar and I'm glad it did, and I'm happy to share that. So Toy, issue number one from Keen Spot Entertainment.
Yeah, when you
I do
said
have to ask. I know this isn't under the cowl, so watch my wording here. But the coin slot on the backside of the toy there—that's not like a vertical slot, is it?
it is
That could be kind of weird.
Nope. It looks like a bank.
Making sure it's an actual coin slot.
Yeah, like that is the one thing, and bringing that up is interesting that because it took me a little while to figure out, like, okay, are all of these toys, but then this one character is just named Toy, and then I would later, I don't even know if it was this issue, because it might have been the second issue when I noticed that, because I'm flipping through the art here just to see. And yeah, that might have been in the second issue when I figured out, like, you see that there's like kind of like a Mr. Potato Head where it just seems like there's a panel
Right.
that opens up in the back,
Panel.
but there is also an actual, horizontal coin slot that I'm like, okay, maybe this is a rabbit bank of some sort. But so there's some lore within these characters that I maybe not privy to yet. Maybe it doesn't really need it, but oh yeah, I'm glad that we took a pause there to make me flip through. Because each of the issues that I've read so far has a little like fake advert, well, an advertisement for an invention that is introduced in here. So they kind of do like a little TV commercial in a way, and it's done just as like it looks like it's like your fake Hostess fruit pie ad type of deal, but it's for an invention that was introduced within the book. So it's funny to see them take like a little stab of like what the advertising for these wacky inventions are going to be, and you get a different one, at least for these first two issues I've read. So anyways, I can't speak enough about Toy. This was a lot of fun. So all right, jump
Yep,
over.
I gotta go back and get it. I thought I had the first issue when you sent us the correct spelling of Shelley, and it's like
yeah
after you reviewed it, I don't remember none of that, so I obviously don't have the first issue.
Yeah, Shelly spelled with a EY, so the correct and very normal spelling of Shelly.
Right, and then next new run from Ghost Machine, I have Rook Exodus number one from Image Comics. This has GF Johns and Jason Fabak are the creators. We got Brand Anderson for the colorist and Rob Lay for letters and a variety of different covers in here. A struggling farmer from Earth was given a second chance on the planet Exodus, a terraformed world where every aspect of nature is controlled by humanity, including the winged scavengers who plagued his crops. Now called Rook, the farmer became one of the wardens, those who wear helmets capable of commanding an animal species. But when the world's engine failed, the power of the wardens fell into the wrong hands. Those who could afford to fled, forcing those left behind to choose between trying to escape this war-torn world before its destruction or fighting to save it. This was very interesting, seeing how, and it starts you right off with a world that's being destroyed, so you're like not sure where it's going to go, what world they're going to jump to, or who's going to escape, how they're going to escape. There's different people trying to build ships to get off the planet, and they're sitting there. It's like they just scavenge for parts, find what they can, build themselves a ship, take off, and a lot of them, the majority of them, basically one out of like 50, make it. The rest all crash back to the planet. So then you're just out there scavenging what parts you can off it before it burns up, and maybe use those for your ship to get off this planet. And everybody's fighting to get off before the planet gets destroyed. But our character here, like it said, he was a dirt farmer back on Earth and stuff, and his biggest problem was dealing with crows. And we get a little thing here where it takes us back and shows him building a scarecrow and stuff and dealing with them. And ironically, he becomes the wearer of the crow helmet and can command the crows. We have some pretty wicked looking creatures on this planet. I mean, he has a confrontation with a grizzly bear at one moment. And you look at the size of this grizzly bear, to him, it's like there was a thing that happened on this planet. I forget what it was, but it wasn't chemical based. It was something in the planet, and a lot of the creatures grew from it and doubled and tripled in size. And we get to meet, which I've talked about this character before in our little teaser book that had all these different storylines in it. We have the pig character, the guy that wears the pig helmet, and he's got all the wild boars that he controls with him and stuff, and they hang out with him. And we get introduced, I don't want to give it away, but we get introduced to some more helmet wearing characters in this first issue. And there is one on the back that we don't get to meet her yet. I'm curious about her because it's a nice wraparound cover, but she's got a wolf helmet and she's hanging out with a wolf. And then we got our pig character and stuff, and there's a bear in the background. But we get to meet a couple of the helmet wearers in this first issue. This is a strong first issue. I mean, usually you just get basic teasers, but this one gives, and it's a nice thick one too. I'd say probably a good 50 some pages, but it gives you a good strong storyline for a first issue. I mean, you almost get the feel that it's like, okay, the planet's going to blow up in the second issue, and there's not, these people got to still get off this planet and what's going on with it. But yeah, you see some interesting battles in here, and finding some of these other characters, these helmet wearing characters, and what they can control. It's just, yeah, and there's an awesome, awesome battle scene that I want to show really bad, but it's going to give some teasers. We possibly lose a character in this first issue. I'm not sure what's all going to happen until I get to the second issue and stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty strong issue. I was really happy about, Christ, I'm losing his name, the red coat character that I reviewed last week. That issue is decent, got me sucked into that character, which was a character that I did not think I'd care for, and now I want to read whatever comes out for him. But this one's way stronger than that issue was, and it's If you like anything with post-apocalyptic, animal control, anything like that, definitely something for you to jump onto with Rook Exodus. And all these, I think you don't have to worry. If you just want to pick up one run and not worry about the other ones, I don't think you have to ever worry about it. They're strong enough on their own that you don't have to worry about the overall Geiger ghost machine world with all these different things.
That was a question I was going to ask because, yeah, based on some of the imagery you're showing with the bear and the pig and all the, lions, tigers, and the bears and all that stuff.
I will show this too in the back. They say I have this choose your animal page, and you can kind of get an idea. I have a lot of different animal helmets that they tease in this picture right here. So you can just imagine rams, wolves, deer, all kinds of interesting things. One looks like a turtle. Yep.
Oh, cool. All right, then. Well, that is going to do it for the weekly reviews, but we have a very fun segment to end the show with, and that is the news.
And now the news.
Okay, for this new segment, since David is here with us on the show, David and I have been hitting the convention circuit in Wisconsin. We've done a handful of them. I've done a couple solo, smaller shows myself. But for Crimson Cowl Media and Cartoonist by Night, we've been tabling next to each other. David's been selling collectibles, he's been selling original art pieces, the comic book that we talked about at the top of the show. And I've been going through with my art and prints and fun stuff like that. We've talked about it on a previous episode and information in the show notes, but your daughter Katie has her own creation as well. He's gonna hold that up. This will be a great segment for the video, by the way. So if you're listening to us on iTunes, we're gonna do a lot of fun show and tell the specimen. So what we're going to do here is a little tease, just kind of what we present at the tables, and we'll actually be debuting some new stuff at our next event, which is Madison Mighty Con, which is Sunday, May 5th, 2024. Go to mightyconshows.com for information and tickets. By the time this episode, both audio and video, are released, it'll be about a week away. We've been teasing it for the last handful of weeks and advertising it on the show. But with David here for us for this 300th episode, we thought we would take a little trip, almost like a little preview of our convention tables, if you will. We can kind of maybe switch off. So I'll kick it off with one thing, and then you can kind of show something, and we'll just kind of see what we have left here.
Sure.
So, as a little example, at the time of this recording, none of these probably won't be sold until the actual convention table. But I've been having fun doing a lot of smaller sketch cards, your traditional sporting card size format. And for the video, just showing off, I got, a page of some Marvels. I've got, almost a full page of DC related characters. I have a mixture of some Ninja Turtles, a couple Godzillas, a Sonic the Hedgehog. I've got some Creature from the Black Lagoon. I got some Disney villains that I drew on Cartoonist by Night. Got some Vampirella, got some Ghostbusters. I got Kate McKinnon's Ghostbuster character there, as well as a Slimer. These are just a couple of the pages of some of the things that are available. I have several more for my sketch card. So these are my most I have the most fun drawing these ones. They're smaller commitments, finer details, takes a little extra patience here and there, but it's been fun to see the result, and I just love the little collectible mentality of a sketch card. So that's kind of one tier of things that I offer at the convention table. I'll throw it over to David as I go grab another prop real quick.
Well, because we already mentioned it, and we're on the sketch cards because they're the same size. Yes, my daughter Katie will be in Madison, is the plan, and she started doing the
Nice.
specimen, and these are trading cards, these little creatures that she started drawing, at a young age. Anybody who's been to our house has noticed a whiteboard in our kitchen that is usually full of just the oddest little drawings and whatever. And so the specimen started out as some of those drawings where she would take on the backs of the cards, or at that time the whiteboard, and she would just write little facts about them, giving each one like their own specimen identification number and talking about their habitats and their diet and things like that. Some of them are kind of related. Either they share a habitat or they eat each other or things like that. So they're very humorous. The trick at a con is getting people to not just see the art, but to actually look at the back and see what they actually are. And when people stop and take a minute to actually look at that and realize what they are, they've actually been very popular. So hopefully she'll get to see firsthand, as this will be the first convention that she's gone to, that she'll be able to see that. There's not a lot in this. I grabbed the book out of her room. She's currently working on some more of these. So she's got about two packs of cards that she's working on doing for Madison that we're gonna stick in with these. And I think that she's planning on doing same price point. So one for $2 or three for five. In addition to that, we've actually started a Facebook page for them. Every once in a while we'll throw a couple up there, or we throw some stuff. There's actually some of the old whiteboard pictures that influenced this that we'll sometimes share on the Facebook page. Yeah, it's really great, and she's planning on expanding that. If you're in Madison, it's a great time to check those out, check out what she comes up with next, and help support this young writer and artist.
Yeah, we did an awesome review that's probably still up on, definitely up on the video feed. I don't know if it's on the audio one, but for the video one, myself and Kirby took some time and we showed off some of our some of the ones that we purchased. So definitely seek that out and seek out the specimen over on Facebook. Moving on to next tier, David and I have some similar items when it comes to, size wise with sketch cards, and then we have some roughly 4x6 type of original sketches as well. So I'm going to move on to that tier here. I've got a lot of them. I haven't done too many in a while because I've switched gears back to the sketch cards. I've been kind of improving my styles and such. But yeah, so I just pulled out a couple of them here. I love myself the creature from the Black Lagoon. I got a lot of Mario related stuff, A&W root beer, which if this one doesn't sell at the next one, I'm keeping it because I really do like that root beer, A&W
They're
root
open for the season now.
beer one. Got the more creature. I don't know what I'm pulling up. More Mario. There's
That was Judge Mario.
one I put towards the top because I did a Nintendo and Peanuts a mashup, and I did Nintendo-nuts, I called them. And I did Sally as Princess Sally there, and that's
Hey.
another one of those two that I really adored. And
That's awesome.
so yeah, a bunch of different sketches, but these are all, at the 4x6 format as well. And David held up some of them, but if you want to jump into yours as
Yeah,
well.
I'll just go right into mine and continue on while we're on that theme. I've got some that are the white and whatever, but I also did a number of these colored ones where they're just one color, just with the black on there. But like it already shows up Cyclops, but that's a good example where I do add a couple of colors, which I thought looked really good doing it that way. But the majority of them are pretty simple. Or again, you got a little bit of color on a few. But the majority are just solid color with black ink. I gotta run through. I've got quite a variety, but they're stacked together, so it's, I'm in the Marvel section right now with a lot of them. And usually that's how I'll display them, is I'll group them together. I definitely have here again, it's just your simple black and white. Or you got the color.
Nice.
So there's really a variety of characters that I've done. Some are more simple than others. But yeah, I enjoy doing these. I've had a lot of fun doing this size. And so that's why Katie's ended up taking all of my trading card size ones and doing those. And I really haven't done a whole lot with those. But yeah, there's a variety. And this is what I'm working on the most between now and the con will be creating more of these since we have the prints done and the comics done and everything else. So I'm hoping to get a larger variety of these cards to sell in preparation. This is pretty much the stack that I've got right now.
Oh, cool. And speaking of prints, I've had these on my table for a while. Just going to show off a couple of these bigger poster prints. This is actually coincidentally a Margot Robbie inspired spread here because you got Margot Barbie and Margot Harley. Try saying those back to back 30 times fast. But yeah, so a bunch of prints there. I will highlight that probably still my favorite thing I've ever done. The creature from the Betty Lagoon, inspired by David's comment when we talked about some Archie horror years ago on this very podcast. And he said, well, you got Jughead the Hunger and Afterlife with Archie and Vampironica. What's next? Creature from the Betty Lagoon. We all had a good laugh, and that laugh sat with me for, a handful of years. And I wrote that down. And then finally, I'm like, I got to put that, make it into an image. I do want to highlight my friends over at Cartoonist by Night. I had done some drawings for them. The Kid Slapshot one, which got printed in one of the Kid Slapshot issues, alongside Kirby, had a piece in there as well. And then my Happy Astronaut one that I did on an episode of Cartoonist by Night, which was selected for a pinup in issue number 2 of Happy Astronauts. So I got big poster prints of those guys. And there's going to be some new prints. I'm going to have some new prints as well as David. But David, if you want to kick it off with debuting your first art prints.
All right, let me just pull this up, and then you can
Sure.
see a variety that I've done here. For example, this obviously is just the cover from Tales from the North Dungeon, but I thought it'd be kind of cool to get that in 11 by 17 size, so I'll have a few of those.
That's cool.
Maybe I'll run a little deal where you get a special combo price if you buy the comic and that. Maybe I'll have to come up with something, some kind of deal there.
Yeah.
And my computer's thinking about something, so I got the spinning wheel. I did stuff like the turtles, which actually started off with just the turtles that I did, and I think when it was at the black and white stage, I don't think it was even colored yet. Was put on there as fan art on a Cartoonist by Night episode early on.
Yeah. Oh,
So
yeah, that's right.
I've worked with that a little bit. I did Jack and Sally sort of in the in that pose of the Joker and Harley
Yeah.
that a lot of people are familiar with. Yeah, I mean it's been that particular image has been seen a lot, so I decided to do something with that. One of the first pieces that I did was Swamp Thing here.
Yeah.
Just trying to do something a little bit different with a character that's out there, put my own style on it. So we've got that. I did this one came about when we were doing some drawing and I was with Anthony and Kirby. And I talked about how I needed more practice drawing hands. And so some people will just draw hands. And I always felt a little bit weird just drawing hands. So I decided to do something with the hand that I drew and turn it into, of course, Thing from the Addams Family wearing Addams Family finger puppets.
Yeah, I love that idea.
So I've got that. I do actually have a variation on this one, which is buried behind one of these other
Oh, yep, I
ones
see it.
here.
Oh, different one.
I've got so much on my desktop here. I've got a black and white version of the same thing. So
Yep, I think
we're
that's it.
back here. So we went with the classic black and white as well, which would be a little bit more reminiscent of the old Addams Family TV show for fans of that. And then I move a few of these out of my way. I'll go to I've got the Uncanny X-Men, which is based on the team lineup when I first started collecting the book way back when, and it was the Australian Outback lineup. So I decided to throw my own style into that and do an X-Men print. So let's see, did I cover everything here?
I
But
think
these are the items that I will have in print form at Mighty Con in Madison is where I will be debuting these.
very cool. And in case you didn't know how to end your share screen, I will stop it for you. Okay, there we go. So we're back to it. So yeah, David is debuting those art prints. Very cool. Can't wait to see those show up in the mail very shortly. And I've got some prints. I'm going to be doing some smaller prints, kind of testing the waters with some sizes. I had done this Miles Morales. If you know him from the Into the Spider-Verse, there's kind of an ongoing joke about him trying to, kind of flirt with Gwen and him just going, "Hey," and I decided, "Hey," and then put some hay behind him. So that's just having a little pun fun, if you will. So I'm gonna have that one available. And this one here was just on a brand new episode of Cartoonist by Night with Kevin Wolf, as we're talking about newspaper comic books. So a lot of people here, I'm debuting this for the first time, showing off Dennis the Menace and Snoopy and Beetle Bailey all kind of hanging out the by the old doghouse there. So yeah, that one is one of the most recent things I've drawn, and just in time to send it in for a fun print order. This one I did, I think I did the physical version on a Cartoonist by Night. Howard the Duck, the original movie inspired version, mashing it up with the Danny DeVito Penguin's rubber ducky mobile. And I thought that was a nice combo, and I'm really happy with that. And I drew that in a physical piece, and but I knew that it could be better because I still prefer my digital work, and just with the, the boasting colors and definitely the correcting of, redoing a line, a million times sometimes. But this one I really love. That's one of my favorite things that I've done, and you can definitely see a lot of joy from Howard there. And then the one that also I spent a lot of time on the physical piece, which I have sold, but I want to do a digital take on it as well. And not just piggybacking off of the Taylor Swift craze, but I am a fan of her music, and I did, after seeing the Eras Tour movie in theaters and seeing the Evermore set dressing with kind of like a fall background with kind of a scary forest type of deal, and the the fall inspired colors of the dress. When I watched that in the theater, I was just like, that I'm gonna draw that when I get home. And I had drawn that on a physical piece, but I knew I wanted to up my game a little more with the digital tools and such. And so yeah, those will all be available in some smaller print formats. And I am testing the waters with some 4x6s, some 5x7s, I think, and some 6x9s. So I'm just kind of, oh, and I did have an Addams Family one as well, which I remember I saw here. So Kirby and Shelley are the proud owners of these upcoming here, as I queue up my share screen one more time. Shelley had requested some Addams Family, and I'm like, oh, I definitely should draw those as well. So, I put it in like an all black background. This is just a collage image of the sketch cards that I drew for them, and they purchased at the one of the previous shows I did. But yeah, doing my little sketch card take on all of these characters, and trying my best to kind of add my own caricature format to it. My brother Adam commented on the Cousin It there and saying, "Hey, that's a pretty good ZZ Top there." I'm like, yeah, thank you. I went for, that's what I was going for. Yeah, some good compliments on the Pugsley one there, but yeah, I really love how those turned out, and then I had an opportunity to kind of put them in like a Brady Bunch style collage format here, and got that made up as a print there, just with a physical work onto a digital print, whereas normally all my other stuff was digital first inspired. So I'm excited to see how that turns out there. So that is a set of prints there. David, was there anything else that you had to go over? I got two other items to show yet.
No, I mean, once again, I will also have some other, comics, collectibles kind of thing that are still left over from the old comic shop. And I'm kind of winding down. I got to figure out a way to unload these. So maybe I'll cut some really good deals with this, so I'm not transporting them back and forth. Because by the time we get around to the next MightyCon in Milwaukee, which would be in September, I'm thinking that I might just be there as just an artist hawking my own goods,
Yeah. That's
rather than doing everything else to kind of completely make that transition.
very cool. I also have some bookmarks that I offer at the table of some of those designs that I showed off, including some that I didn't. And oh, and I had the Marvels too. I think I did some smaller prints of my take on the Marvels there, of all of them sipping their cups and having their popcorn, celebrating that movie release from last year. Got a bunch of different bookmarks and some brand new items that just showed up in the mail. Some of you haven't seen these, some have just seen pictures of these. Ones that I will be selling at the table is I had done a Jughead piece of him holding up a submarine sandwich in
Ooh.
a full print. Looks it's taken from Dirty Dancing, and at the end scene dance and everything, and it's Jughead holding up a giant submarine. So I have this as a sticker. These are my first ever stickers that I'm debuting, and that Howard the Ducky, as I'm basically calling it. Howard and the Duck here are both in the these are 2-inch sticker formats. So very excited how that turned out. And I wanted something that was more kind of more generic in a sense of, like, if you're a comic book fan and you just like stickers, and while those ones are cute and can work too, but I took the design I did of the short box of comic books that I designed for the Crimson Cowl bookmark, and I took that, and it has Kid Slapshot and Happy Astronaut sticking out of it. It has Brian Lynch's Pumpkin Man sticker on the front. It has Mona Gertrude from Desmond Reed. It has the Crimson Cowl logo on and some random stickers. And I decided to, I'm like, you know what? That's kind of a cool, just random thing, just, a box of comics. So I was going to test the waters with that. That's not something that would be good for like a print. There's really no purpose for it beyond the bookmark and advertising. But I'm like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing for there. And the other ones here, all the other ones I got were mostly for personal use, and I'll share them here, even though they're not for sale. But there's a couple extra personal ones that are gifts for some very special friends of mine. So I'll show them after we record. But I'm setting those aside there because I'm not sure when they're going to get their hands on them yet. And then I just have to lay out the other ones here. They're real tiny stickers, so now they're falling over. Lauren Lapkus is one of my favorite comedians. You'll know her. She had a recurring role on The Big Bang Theory towards the end. She was in Jurassic World. She's from the Between Two Ferns movie. She's known from her podcast, Threedom and Newcomers, and a frequent, improv comedian for Comedy Bang Bang. So I have her. This is another, just a personal one here of that I had drawn her. And then I have some copies of the Cartoonist by Night logo, which is a design by Troy Dungera, but I got his permission to make some stickers of myself because he does offer some through his Threadless shop as well. And then I don't know if I've ever shown these on the show before, but I have on Cartoonist by Night. But I had drawn the Cartoonist by Night members in Peanuts style, Charles Schulz, and what we would look like there. So here's a little Troy Dungera that is now in a sticker format. Yep, and David is co-advertising here on the side, Cartoonist by Night over on YouTube. But Troy Dungera is a little sticker now. Matt Fife and his big hot dog finger and hands there. So yep, there is Matt Fife is a little sticker. Normally I'd save myself towards the end, but the funnier one I'll save at the end. Here is me dressed up in my normal kind of black hoodie and jeans and me in Peanuts form. So it's fun that I now have a sticker version of myself. And then Matt Rogers, who is a taller fellow. I couldn't really figure out how to characterize him into a Peanut style. All of us, there were certain features and things and designs that worked pretty well. But with him, I'm just like, I cannot crack the code. I'm like, I saved them for the end, and I just could not find an angle how to make a taller, skinnier man of his build to turn into a Peanuts character. And then I think it was Troy that said, "Hey, you should make him Snoopy." And then I'm like, "Oh, that would be fun. I could put one of his 90s styled hats on him." And then I'm like, "Oh, I'll make him a little taller, and it'll be a tall Snoopy. That's kind of funny." And then Troy is the one that just said, "You should get him a cheetah print underwear for absolutely no reason whatsoever." So here is Rogers as Snoopy with cheetah print underwear on, and for some reason in the lineup. It looks right. It looks like Rogers for some weird reason. He is a dog lover as well, so it all works out. But those are some fun stickers, and all of those stickers were created. I created the designs, sent over the files for Lavi. Lavi is one of our previous guests on Cartoonist by Night. We hung out and drew and discussed Disney villains, and she has a sticker business on the side as well. So you can go to her website information. I'll put all that stuff here. If you'd like to get stickers made by Lavi, please check out her website, lavihq.card.co. That's lavihq.card.co. LaviHQ.card.co. Also find the link in the show notes. But Lavi, she does that on the side of outside of her art, and these came out beautiful. The other ones, which I'll show you guys after the recording, I got 3-inch stickers there. These, I'm so happy with these, and a quick turnaround, and the big order that I place kind of helped her kind of get into handling the bigger orders and such too. So I'm excited to just do more just for my own personal use, and think I've got a lot of fun ideas just to make some cool fun stickers. So the first three stickers that I showed, the comic box, the Howard the Ducky, and Jughead, will be ones that are available for purchase at the table. And I think that covers everything. So Mighty Con Madison, that is Sunday, May 5th, 2024. By the time you hear and watch this, if you're an avid viewer and listener, and you'll watch it right away, we're just about a week away until that convention happens. MightyConShows.com for tickets and information. Excited to revisit the Madison Mighty Con for our second visit there. Mighty Con shows are a lot of fun, and we've done a couple Milwaukee, now done a couple Madison, going back to Milwaukee, as David said, this coming September, and hopefully have some extra exciting things, but that's for the future to decide. That is going to do it then for the kind of our in-person show and tell, showing off what we do. To kind of plug some other things, I have some original gnome sketch cards that are at the Gift Nook. That is local to us here in Wisconsin. So go to the Gift Nook on Facebook and on Instagram for further information. There's an ad that I think plays before or after this episode for more information on that. But I have exclusive cards that I've drawn just for them. And I do have some print work available there as well. So thank you to my friends over at the Gift Nook. That is an awesome place for local creators, crafters, artists, everybody there. Upcoming event, Free Comic Book Day is right around the corner, which is Sunday, May 4th. May the 4th be with you, is the day before Mighty Con Madison and Free Comic Book Day. So we always encourage you to visit your local comic book shop, check out what they have to offer for the free comic books as well as deals, and specifically supporting your local comic shop during what is the busiest day of the year for drawing an extra attention with the free comic books that the publishers offer. They're offered for free, select books for free for the patrons, but they do come at a cost for the comic book shop owners. So it's always good to pick up some books, get some new people to the store. Check out their, back issues, new issues, trade paperbacks, toys, whatever. It's a good time to check out. And I know Kirby, I've done it too, but Kirby, making a plan to, always hit up a couple shops, and it's always a fun celebration to hit up as many shops as you can. So that'll be exciting. I will be at Oh Yeah Comics in beautiful downtown Skokie, Illinois. I won't be there as a creator aspect. One fun thing, I was invited to, they do a 2-day event because they have a very big Jewish community in Skokie, Illinois. So I think this is their third anniversary because, like, due to the religion, they're not able to attend the events on Saturday. So for the third year in a row, Joe Crone, who's the awesome manager down there, they basically do round two. They do day two of Free Comic Book Day to allow more people to attend that. And what they do for that, they've got some big name creators, including Art Baltazar, the store co-owner and such. The creators over at the Santos Sisters, Greg and Fake, are going to be there. There's a couple other creators that are going to be there on that Saturday. But then on Sunday, they usually do a more local creator spotlight. And it was exciting to be invited to set up a little table at Oh Yeah Comics. I had debuted my first print there last year at Free Comic Book Day, and I was invited to set up a table there. And it felt kind of cool to A, be invited. I was super honored. And then it felt cool and bad that I'm like, ooh, I actually have to turn it down because I'm tabling at MightyCon Madison. So it was kind of a weird thing where I'm just like, oh, I'm already selling art somewhere else. But they just said, nope, we'll just do it the next time. We'll get you again. So, but yeah, they do a lot of cool things down there. So if you are a fan of Oh Yeah Comics and in the Skokie area and stuff, definitely check out the Free Comic Book Day weekend, not just Saturday, but Sunday as well. I think that's going to do it for all the plugs. That was a lot of talking. I'm running out of steam, but I don't think I tripped over any of my words. Like now I am. Now that I'm tripping over words, I'm saying that I'm tripping over words. So that is going to do it. Thank you to everybody that listens and watches this very show. This is 300 episodes that we've done recorded. We've done a couple in person, unrecorded before we decided to turn the mics on. But it's been a lot of fun to do this almost every week since the original incarnation of the Crimson Cowl comic book store and all the different iterations in Crimson Cowl Media and the transformations. And here we are, 300 episodes. And of course, welcoming back David Gloyd, who is the co-creator of the Crimson Cowl brand, talking about that comic book, which once again, just reach out to us. And if you're visiting us in Madison, you could pick up a copy of the comic book there as well. But I'll let you say a couple things, David, but thank you for being on the episode.
Oh, you're welcome. And yeah, again, it barely feels like it's been 300 years.
Yeah, time just flies by, and we all look pretty darn good, if you ask me.
Sorry, Anthony hadn't made the joke, so I had to throw it in there. I mean, what's an anniversary issue without the year joke thrown into it, right?
Yep, I'm glad you're picking up the slack there. So, but yeah, so that was definitely a lot of fun. Please do everything you can to like and subscribe. We do have our traditional plugs, so crimsoncowl.com for original web comics. And more information about what we do here at the podcast and Crimson Cowl Comic Club on YouTube to subscribe, rate, and review. That'll definitely help us out if you want to do that. This was a big show and tell heavy show. A lot of the episodes we do, we like to show off panels, and you see animals jump on screen a couple times here and there. You can only get that experience by subscribing to us on YouTube. So search out Crimson Cowl Comics or Crimson Cowl Comic Club. Any of those words will get you there to subscribe to us on YouTube. And that is where I put more of the effort when it comes to the editing because of the visual presentation of it all. Kirby has a spin-off podcast called Under the Cowl of MS. Do you want to talk about Let since this is episode 300, maybe it'll have an extra, couple extra eyes of people seeing, hey, what's this? So can you give us a brief description what Under the Color of MS is and what's going on?
Yeah, comic book reviews, previews, comic book talk, comic book reading. You got video games, movie, entertainment, little MS and stuff like that. Talk, random talk. I started my podcast episodes now, so I got like three in the bank there. My new YouTube podcast episodes where I talk about whatever. Yeah, just check out at Under the Color of MS and you'll find my Instagram, my YouTube, all that stuff. And I have just about anything that you can think of. And if there's something you want me to do, tell me and I'll do it. Got all kinds of stuff out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I primarily watch a lot of the stuff through YouTube, just no matter what kind of channel it is, whether it's our stuff, Kirby stuff, other creators and stuff. I'm a big YouTube viewer, and every time after work I turn on the YouTube channel over on my Roku app, and there's usually a Kirby video that pops up, and I never know what it's going to be. And like I said, it could be reviews, it's this and that, and there's a lot of different stuff happening over there. So definitely follow Under the Color of MS across all the social media channels, and give them some likes and subscribes and shares and all that kind of stuff. That just only continues to help us. We all do this for fun. We have fun doing it. Meeting at the comic club store. We're all strangers for the most part, and then meeting at this store for the love of comic books. And here we are, 300 episodes later. I have some art accounts over on Anthony Latch on Facebook and Instagram. That's LAATSCH. At the time that this episode is out, I have started Creature Week because we have a brand new Creature the Black Lagoon comic book that is coming out from, is that Image Comics? I think Image is doing the
I'm
universe.
not sure.
Yeah, it might be, but they've done the Dracula run. Now they're doing Creature from the Black Lagoon. So I've been stockpiling. I've been drawing so much creature stuff, and I'm going to just start doing one a day, probably going to 2 weeks probably. But I'm all hyped up for that comic book, which I'll talk on our next available episode. But when I go down to Oh Yeah Comics in beautiful downtown Skokie, they have a local creator section. I was invited to bring down some original stuff to sell, so I'm saving a page of. I got some more to fill up here. I'm doing mostly cartoony stuff, and this will be posted here, but this hasn't been posted at the time of recording. But I have a Simpsons style creature. I got a Grinch style. Got a Family Guy style. I got a Ren and Stimpy style. I love how those turned out. And then I just did a cartoony style one there of my own. And then I recently did a Pink Panther style. So I'm basically going through, and I've got a couple more that I'm going to be drawing after we wrap up this episode. But I decided I'm just going to bring a page full of creatures down for them. So these cards are taken out of my binder and going to be exclusive to the Oh Yeah Comics Skokie audience. Excited to have some art circulating out in Illinois as well. Unless people don't buy them, and then I'm going to buy them when I go down later this year again. So, yeah, that is going to do it. So, Cartoonist by Night on YouTube. We just dropped a newspaper episode, newspaper comics, rather. We just don't talk about like the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel or something like that. But the newspaper comics, Kevin Wolf, who both Kirby and I have talked about. I don't know when these plugs are going to end, but there's a lot of stuff we do here, everybody. Kevin Wolf does these awesome books, To Fight a Hessian and the upcoming The California Kids. If you want to learn all about that, it's available right now, and even to the audience I'm talking to, because in real time the episode is out there. Kevin Wolf hangs out with the Cartoonist by Night crew as we learn about his drawing career and all the experiences he's had. We see a lot of his work from high school and junior college and stuff like that, so it's pretty cool. And we talk about our love for newspaper comics and draw a bunch of new art. Cartoonist by Night over on YouTube. It's a drawing show. Please check it out. Spread the word. Our next episode we're going to record is our 1 year anniversary. Can't believe that we've been doing it for 100 years. Oh, wait, just 1 year, just literally 1 year. But we do have over 20 episodes. I think there's 22 or 23 that are available there. I will be seeing my Cartoonist by Night brother, Matt Fife, at C2E2 on Saturday. So I'm excited to join up with somebody who I only get to mostly hang out with through the interwebs. All right. I think that covered it. By the way, when Kevin Wolf does some more stuff at California Kids, we're going to bring him on this very show. So that's a future guest tease. Check out Crimson Cowl Media, crimsoncowl.com. Thank you for 300 episodes of this very show. This whole time, I've been hosting 300 episodes of the Crimson Cowl Comic Club podcast, but not all 300 because Katie filled in for a few of those.
I've been AI, David, and you didn't even know.
I told 300 tales of mice and crows and bears, oh my.
And I've been Kaiju number 300.
To be continued.
Spark joy.
You'll shoot your eye out. You'll shoot your eye out.
Yes, Nanny.
I am bullet.
Well, that's not ketchup.
Thank you, Slimer.